Good afternoon. This is KTOO. I'm Yvonne Krumrie. Thank you for listening. U.S. House Republicans put the top executives of NPR and PBS on the hot seat today, and Democrats used the hearings to spotlight Alaska as an example of the value of public broadcasting. The hearing was one of the first of the House Subcommittee on Delivering on Government Efficiency. The chair of the so-called DOGE panel is Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia, who says the public broadcasting networks are biased and shouldn't receive public funds.
We will be calling for the complete and total defund and dismantling of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
CPB receives more than $500 million a year from the federal government, most of which goes to local stations. The stations produce local news and programs and play NPR and PBS to air national content. Democrats on the panel invited Alaska Public Media President Ed Ullman to testify. He said that in many parts of Alaska and the country, public media is the only local outlet for broadcast news and provides critical warnings and alerts during emergencies. Ullman has also pointed out that Alaska public media stations produce audio and video stories about Alaskans that air nationally because of their affiliation with the national networks.
Without PBS, without NPR, you wouldn't hear stories, news stories, public affairs stories, community stories from Alaska. You wouldn't see them on the PBS NewsHour. This is vital. It's vital for Alaskans to know that they're connected to their nation and that what we do in Alaska matters to our nation.
The hearing was mostly focused on Republican complaints about the national networks. NPR President Catherine Marr acknowledged the network was wrong to initially dismiss the importance of certain news stories, such as what was on Hunter Biden's laptop and the theory that the COVID pandemic began with a leak from a Chinese virology lab. Juneau's mayor selected 11 residents to serve on a short-term rental task force. The group's goal is to assess the benefits and downsides of short-term rentals in the housing market and recommend whether they need to be regulated. But there's a bit of a problem with the task force. All but one member are homeowners. As KTOO's Clarice Larson reports, a member of the group is concerned that the lack of perspective from renters could skew its recommendations.
For some people in Juneau, short-term rentals are an opportunity to bring in some extra cash or to make ends meet. But as the number of Airbnbs and VRBOs increases, others feel they're taking away housing desperately needed in the community. City data and different analyses suggest there are likely around 300 to 400 short-term rentals in Juneau, but that number could be even higher. Short-term rentals are largely unregulated in Juneau, but a new city task force is meeting regularly to decide whether there should be some firmer rules in place. But there's a problem with that group, says Assemblymember Alicia Hughes-Scandies. She's the only member out of 11 who rents.
We need to have people affected by the industry, and that would be renters. And that's just, a demographic that sometimes is not represented.
She says the makeup of the task force doesn't fully represent the diversity of Juneau's housing needs. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, about a third of residents are renters in Juneau. That's a starkly different makeup from the task force.
I don't want to suggest that people can't make, you know, really good civic contributions to a place they care about, but it is not marked by that sense of urgency because they're not affected in the same way.
Both renting and owning in Juneau are expensive. The average single-family home costs more in Juneau than anywhere else in the state, and Juneau ranks fifth in the state for the highest average rental cost for a two-bedroom. The task force's goal is to assess the short-term rental market and make recommendations that improve housing availability. Mayor Beth Weldon handpicked the members of the group. She says despite the lack of renters, she believes the group can still make decisions that represent the various viewpoints of short-term rentals in town.
Are we missing the people that are going to come and say, I can't find rental places? Yes. But are we still counting for people there that want to regulate? I think that that's already represented.
She noted that she did ask a handful of people who were renters to join the task force, but they declined.
It's just, you know, quite honestly, when you do task force, it's hard to get all the voices, but keep the group a manageable group.
The task force has been meeting biweekly since January. They plan to host two public meetings in the coming months to get feedback from residents on what kind of regulations they'd like to see. Hughes-Scandies says it's important that people, specifically long-term renters, go to these meetings and make sure their voices are heard.
That is a real opportunity to be heard, and we would love to hear your thoughts on what you think we should do, how you think we should do it. you know, and if people have strong thoughts about the process, then we would love to learn from that.
Once the task force makes its recommendations, it will ultimately be up to the assembly to decide on how to implement them. If they pass regulations, Juneau wouldn't be the first community in Alaska to do so. Communities around the state have already taken steps to curb the increase in their markets. In Sitka, short-term rental owners are required to live on the property for half the year. And Wasilla only offers 75 short-term rental permits per year. Vacation destinations in states like Colorado have also put into place similar laws. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
And an Alaska Airlines jet leaving Wrangell Sunday afternoon declared an in-flight emergency while headed to Seattle. The winglet flaps were stuck in the takeoff position. 13 minutes into the flight, before landing at its routine stop in Ketchikan en route to Seattle, the plane looped around. Then it descended and safely landed at the Ketchikan International Airport. Wranglerite Val Massey was on the flight and recorded the pilot communicating with the passengers once the plane landed.
For precautionary reasons, I did declare it an emergency. And so obviously now we're fully safe on the ground. The airplane's great. However, we're not going to get to take this airplane to Seattle until it gets fixed. So I suspect that'll be quite a delay.
Massey says after landing, a mechanic worked on the issue, but she chose to get off the plane to take a different flight to Seattle the next day. An Alaska Airlines spokesperson responded by email, saying their maintenance team inspected the issue. The aircraft was then cleared to fly to Seattle after a two-hour delay. Massey said she was grateful the pilot was transparent, even though it's not something she wants to hear on a flight. She says she's been aware of several recent flight issues in the country through national news.
It is isolating living on an island to be educated about it and be aware and not let anything of any nature just go unnoticed because it's normalized.
So far in 2025, there have been 150 plane crashes in the United States, with 23 of them being fatal, according to the National Transportation Safety Board. And you're listening to Tongass Voices, perspectives from the homelands of the Occoquan and beyond. A retired couple in Juneau has picked up an interesting hobby, researching true crime stories in Southeast Alaska's history. Betsy Longenbaugh and Ed Schoenfeld host walking tours and talks, and Longenbaugh has turned the research into two books, with another in progress. Her first work of fiction, Death in the Underworld, is based on a crime committed in Douglas in 1916. And they have two upcoming presentations, called Death with Dessert, in April and in May.
Our daughter, when we talked about Alaska's first serial killer, made a cheesecake with a cereal crust. So she's very deliberate about choosing choosing the desserts and tailoring them to our presentation.
We had a story about dismemberment and dismemberment, and she created a dismembered lemon meringue pie.
I'm Betsy Longenbaugh.
I'm Ed Schoenfeld.
Well, both of us are retired. We've been retired now for somewhere between 6 and 7 years. And our passion after we retired, very unexpectedly, became looking into historic murders in not just Juneau, but some of the other communities in Southeast Alaska.
And we call our effort True Crime Alaska, because everybody needs to be branded, right? And we research historic true crime. And it's not just to do blood and guts, you know, like so much of the true crime reporting is these days. But we really like to talk about what's going on in the community. And it really gives you a window into a community at a different point of time. I mean, Juneau in 1904 or, you know, Tenneke in the 1930s.
Yeah. And 1906, to be precise.
Okay. And beyond that, it's also just it gives us a chance to talk about not only the particular cases, but how the justice system worked, how the community responded to times of crisis, which in a small town, a murder generally is a crisis, and also to examine how the judicial system, the police, et cetera, responded to crimes against women and people of color, because obviously there was a lot of discrimination in those days.
But also how the media covered it. I mean, one of the things that have been interesting and frustrating is when we do our research, we know that there are Alaska Native women and men being killed. There's very little coverage about them in the newspapers. There might be an account that it happened, but often it's not much more than a name or two and maybe a charge. Finding those little bits and pieces, and sometimes big bits and pieces, is really the fun part. Again, it's the puzzle, right? It's figuring out.
And sometimes we just have a feeling that there's something missing. that maybe we can find if we dig deeper. And it's the same as when you're reporting. You think you have the story, but you've done enough of this to think there's something else going on here we should know about.
We've been very clear about drawing the line at statehood, because when we initially did this work, not the writing but the walking tours, we included some cases that Ed had covered as a reporter and that I was familiar with. And it became too traumatic, not just for us but for the people who were hearing the stories. I remember a walking tour where we were talking about a contemporary murder. It was, I don't know, 25, 30 years ago. But one of the people on the tour had taught the defendant in grade school. Mm-hmm. And another tour, we'd had somebody who'd served on the jury. And I'm from a little town. You know, I'm from Sitka. And I know how these things haunt communities. They really haunt communities. And we didn't want to be participating in that haunting. We wanted to be able to talk about stories where, as I like to put it, everybody would be dead anyway. Because it takes away that immediacy and the trauma. And I think the trauma and sadness of the murder, which are always just really heartbreaking, is balanced by telling more about their story. And Ed likes to think of it as bringing names to the fore that have been long forgotten. The first book is Forgotten Murders, and it's not just forgotten murders. In my mind, it's forgotten victims.
That was Betsy Longenbaugh and Ed Schoenveld on their true crime research. You can find out more about their talks and books at truecrimealaska.com. And as for the weather here in Juneau, it's currently 48 degrees and sunny this afternoon. There is a high wind warning in effect for tonight, starting at 1 a.m. and going until about noon tomorrow, with gusts up to 60 miles an hour expected. The low tonight looks like it'll be around 40 degrees. Tomorrow looks sunny as well, with a high of 53. You're listening to KTOO.